Welcome to another PI World podcast. This is an audio-only version offered as another way to enjoy our great content. A full video version can be seen on piworld.co.uk, where you can find many more videos of interest to investors.
A very warm welcome to all of you, and thank you very much indeed for joining us on the presentation of the results of Aquis Exchange PLC. My name's Alistair Haynes. I'm the founder and chief executive, and with me is Jonathan Cleland, who is the COO and CFO. Jonathan, if you just want to introduce yourself.
Thank you, Alistair. Yes, it's a pleasure to join you today. Alistair and I have worked together since the inception of Aquis, which is now just a little over 8 years, and it's been a fabulous journey, a great pleasure, and we look forward to many more years of success in the future.
Okay, well, let's go straight into the presentation. For those of you who are not familiar with Aquis, I just thought I would do an outline of what the company is. We are one company. We have three divisions: the Aquis Exchange, which is the original exchange business, which covers 1,700 stocks across 14 different markets; the Aquis Stock Exchange, which is the new acquisition of the NEX Exchange; and Aquis Technologies. If I go into a little bit more detail about what each of those does, the Aquis Exchange, we established it back, as Jonathan said, in 2012. And in the exchange business, we are fully prepared for Brexit. So we actually operate two MTFs, that's multilateral trading facilities, which allows us one in London and one in Paris, which gives us the ability that in the case of a hard Brexit, we will be able to service any client in any jurisdiction around the world for all the European markets of which we trade. And as I said, that is 14. In 2015, once we started, we realized that we had this incredibly good and efficient matching engine technology. And we realized that there were a lot of industries, a lot of other areas, new asset classes that wanted to find matching technology. So we started Aquis Technologies, and we license our technologies to third parties. And that has been a tremendous growth area for us. And we'll talk a little bit later about that. The third and the most recent, of course, is the Aquis Stock Exchange. And I will go into further detail about how we look to change that business dramatically from what it's done in the past. So let's go back to the results. We've had, in our belief, a really strong performance with EBITDA of $540,000. And of course, a profit, our very first profit after tax. As a sort of entrepreneur, there is no doubt about that the most exciting moment in your sort of career is when you first buy your company off the shelf for maybe $4.99 or whatever it is, and you establish your business. The second stage is once you've grown your business to take that company public, and that is a tremendous moment, and we did that 2 years ago. But of course, the whole purpose of being a business is that point in time when you actually get into profit. And I'm absolutely delighted to say that for the very first time we achieved, I know it's only small, a profit of 12,000, but what it does show is that the business model works and we've set ourselves on a very strong trajectory for good future profits. We've continued to grow, and we'll look at the KPIs that we've set ourselves despite this incredible, unprecedented environment. And I think, you know, we've had in 2019, the year of Brexit, or the failure to deliver Brexit, which actually caused awful problems to the market in low volumes and low volatility, and then followed in 2020 with this extraordinary high volume, high volatility as a result of this tragic pandemic with COVID. And despite all of that, in both sets of conditions of low volatility and and more recently, obviously, the high volatility, we've managed to grow our business very successfully and very rapidly. We've made good progress with the Aquis Stock Exchange since completion. And some of the reason that I think we've managed to attain profitability earlier than we anticipated is that the synergies between the two businesses have been brought forward far better and far quicker than we actually imagined at the time. And I'll talk a little bit more about that acquisition and what great hopes we have for the future. So let's look at some of the KPIs. If we look at the sort of things that people do measure us by, what I think is really important here is, despite this difficult conditions, we've managed to grow liquidity. And I'll show you a chart about what I mean by liquidity. But for any exchange, it's like any marketplace. It really depends on the quality of the goods that are in that marketplace. And if I look here, we today control 21% over the period of the last 6 months of all the available liquidity at the best prices that customers can trade on. Now, it is a requirement under the regulation, MiFID II regulation, for best execution. And customers are required to look at the best prices available. And because of our model and because what we've done, we've managed to attain 21% of all the liquidity available in the top 1,700 stocks across 14 markets. Now, how have we done that? So what is Aquis Exchange itself? The original business is different to any other exchange in the world for two reasons. The first reason is that we introduced the subscription model, and we're the only exchange today that operates a subscription model. So unlike the London Stock Exchange or any exchange in Europe, which charges its customers based on an ad valorem price, so in other words, a small percentage every single time somebody trades, we charge our customers on message traffic. We copied our model from what goes on in other industries, such as the telecoms industry. So rather like when you buy a mobile phone, you can buy a package which gives you unlimited text, unlimited downloads, and unlimited calls. Aquis allows its customers to have unlimited connectivity, unlimited trading, and unlimited data. And that is really important because, of course, the fastest growing companies in the last 20 years in the world have all been subscription models. We look at what's happened to Netflix, taking away the business of Blockbuster and how it has changed the movie industry. You look at Spotify in the music industry, where for $30 million worth of songs, you can actually get for $10 or $12 a month. And you can see how people and the marginal cost of zero there, people can listen to as much music as they like for that de minimis amount of payment per month. We've seen the way that Amazon Prime has changed the retail market. And we can go on and on in all these different businesses. Subscriptions change human behavior. And if we want to grow liquidity and we want to grow the public markets, then the subscription model is the best way forward. The second thing that differentiates us is we brought in a rule, a very controversial rule, back in 2016. And what we did is we said that those people who are proprietary traders, and proprietary traders do a very large amount of business, whether they be high-frequency trading or proprietary trading firms of banks, but what we said is those traders can access Aquis Exchange, but only in a passive way. They can supply orders to a market, but they can't aggress and take an order away from the market. And whilst that was very unpopular with them at the time, what we didn't realize is we actually created the world's first protected market for end investors, because the toxicity, the way that prices move, is different on our exchange because we don't allow the very, very low latency arbitrage that takes place today on other venues. And we can see that, and I will show you a slide later on to demonstrate that. Cost of trading is not just about price. The cost of trading, of any of you who have traded, and I'm sure you all have, is that when you start to put your order into the market, how price moves away from you. And what we can prove and show at Aquis is that that doesn't happen here because we've eliminated this low-risk arbitrage by putting this ban on proprietary traders aggressively trading on the platform. And that has allowed us to grow liquidity very significantly. So today, behind the national exchanges, we are the largest provider of liquidity in equities in the whole of Europe. And that metric is very valuable to us. Because in the same way as if you are in a marketplace, if the quality of the goods and the goods are there, then what will happen is you will get customers to come to your market. Now, today, on the bottom right-hand corner, you will see that our market share of actual execution is 4.51%. And that shows that the difference between 4.51% and 21% is the opportunity that we have to grow our business substantially from where we are. And you may well ask the question, why isn't our market share already at 21%? And that is simply because of the third metric. As of today, not everybody has connected to the exchange. As of today, when some of the banks have connected to the exchange, still have the vested interest to trade in the traditional way rather than necessarily in the way that we believe best execution. And we expected that. That is not something that we didn't anticipate. And this is because there is an education process. We have to show people that the value proposition that we're providing with the deepest liquidity pool at the cheapest price, at the lowest toxicity, is actually extremely good to end investors. And we've always said that that will take time to progress. But I'm glad to say that we are making that progress. We have got 31 clients, and that is probably the number that I'm most disappointed in the KPIs. It has grown. But onboarding clients when most people are working from home during a COVID pandemic has actually been quite difficult. But we remain very, very optimistic that we will see that number to continue to grow and we will see our market share continuing to grow. If I move on to the next slide, you will see that the market share is rising. In fact, in August, when markets returned to more normal times, they were quite extraordinary in the March and April times. And you can see we had a dip in March and April this year. You can actually see that little V in that green line. And that is because during these very, very high volatile, high volume days, the high frequency trading and proprietary traders trade an awful lot more. And it is actually a remarkably good result that we didn't see our market share decline further. But in the normal times, which we can say August and what we're seeing in September and hopefully going forward, we actually reached a record of 4.96%. So a fraction under 5% of all European trading was actually executed on the Aquis exchange platform. I said we talk a little bit about liquidity. Now, this is a complex slide, but what we've done here is we've taken every single piece of data regarding the bid and offer spread on every one of the major markets across Europe and looked at the total volumes and what our percentage is over a six-month period. And what you can see on the top line, the blue horizontal line, is the available liquidity at the very best price across these huge number of stocks for every second in time across that six-month period. And that blue line is ahead of all our direct competitors, the Chi-X market, the BATS market, the Turquoise market. And we control, as I said, 21% of all that liquidity. What you can see by the other lines, the other colors, so let's look at either the red or the green, is the vertical boxes are the actual market share of execution. And what normally happens is you can see that the amount of liquidity roughly equates to the actual amount of execution that is done. So if we look at that line there, you can see that the gray line of Chi-X is approximately across the level of the tops of where the gray bars are. But in the case of Aquis, you can see that the blue line is significantly above the bar charts. And that means that as we start to get more clients on board, as we start to get the banks to use their smart order routers, which is the electronic mechanism for allocating trades within the bank, we believe that our market share will grow and grow very, very significantly from the current point in time. Now, I'm now going to pass over to Jonathan, who will talk and go through the divisional reviews of Aquis Exchange.
Thank you. I'll start with the divisional review on the Aquis Exchange, the secondary market MTF. Increasing trading volumes led to a significant growth in revenue, close to 40%, up to 3.7 million for the half year. And we've continued to increase the number of stocks and ETFs available across the 14 European markets. In the back end of last year, we introduced the market at close product. This is a product which competes directly with the national exchanges closing auctions. And it has started to attract some real interest. We have a couple of investment banks who are trading actively in that product and a number of others who've expressed interest in joining it. And then finally, as Alistair mentioned previously, we are fully prepared for a no-deal Brexit. We have a French subsidiary, which is authorized by the regulatory authorities in France, and that will allow us to continue to offer stocks across Europe in whatever solution our politicians manage to come to. If I move on to the subscription pricing model, we've made some changes. First of all, we've made some changes in terms of the data, and Alistair will explain the rationale behind that, the harmonization between AQXE, the MTF, and AQSE, our new primary listing market. But on the secondary market side, we have introduced a new unlimited tier. So if a member is transacting more than 50,000 messages a day, average the cost a month, then they will then be increasing their fees to £80,000 a month. The other tiers we have left as they were right from the start of the creation of Aquis. The other thing that we have within the portfolio is the Market at Close product that I mentioned previously, and that is a further £20,000 a month charge to the members. But it is a very, very effective for them, and we think generates considerable cost savings to them. We move on to Aquis Technologies. Aquis Technologies has created, we believe, quite a niche marketplace in startup companies. So our clients are often entrepreneurial, innovative organizations who are launching new exchanges, not necessarily in equities. In fact, that could potentially compete with us, but in new asset classes. We have a bond on infrastructure platform and a reinsurance platform. Two very high quality companies which have made great progress, and all their technology is provided by Aquis, so they are very reliant on us. But the reason we believe they came to us is that we share a similar philosophy and spirit in terms of what we're trying to achieve. Aquis has a very flexible approach in terms of our organization, and it seems to resonate well with our clients. We continue to grow the pipeline in this, but also we believe in the future we should be able to expand out and appeal to a wider horizon, potentially smaller equity exchanges who are already established, even national exchanges. Market data has increased. It's more than doubled the revenue for the first half year from 0.15 million to 0.37, and we believe it will continue to become more and more important. And that is part of the reason why we have driven to harmonize the data product across all our business lines. I'm now going to hand you back to Alistair, who will talk more about AQSE.
I just want to talk now about the Aquis Stock Exchange, which remains an incredibly exciting and, I believe, transformational deal for us. We bought the Next Exchange and completed the deal back in March this year for £1. Our own view is that the primary markets are in desperate need of strong competition. And we believe that over the last 20 years or so, that competition hasn't actually truly materialized. And I want to talk today about the things that we're looking to do and why we believe that we can really make a very big difference to the primary market and the secondary trading of small cap growth and value stocks. Our vision, very clearly, is for the Aquis Stock Exchange to become the home for quality growth businesses. And in order to do that, it's going to require a number of different things. We have to raise standards and gain credibility, something that I don't think any competitor has actually done in the past. We have to increase the amount of liquidity and certainly narrow spreads so that retail investors can get actively involved in these stocks. And we need to make quite certain that institutional investors will actually invest in the companies that are quoted on the Aquis Stock Exchange. So what are we going to do and how are we going to do that? Well, the first thing to say is we're already migrating this technology, our technology, which we believe is one of the world's leading technologies and has been the reason, one of the reasons, by creating the largest liquidity pool in Europe for large caps. And we're going to use that core technology within the Aquis Stock Exchange. And I'm delighted to say that as of next weekend, that transfer will be completed and the full integration of the Next staff, as well as the technology, will be completed by Monday next week. We've actually already done three listings since we've taken over the business. British Honey Company, which many of you will know because you will have seen the purchase of Honey Gin in certain supermarkets, Vulcan Industries, which is an engineering conglomerate, and TruSpine, a medical device, all of companies which we're absolutely delighted. And what I think is key to that is we not only saw retail investment, but more importantly, we actually saw institutional investment. And it is that balance between institutional and retail that is absolutely critical to be able to get the liquidity that is required in the secondary trading of these stocks. So what did we do and what are we going to do? The first thing we did is, having completed the deal in March, is in May, we asked the market 18 different questions as part of a consultation process. Again, delighted with the response. There were over 100 people either verbally or wrote written responses to us, which shows to me the importance, particularly at a time of COVID, when people need primary markets to be working at their best. Public markets today tend to be the last resort for a lot of companies. And we've seen over the last 25 years a huge de-equitization of small cap companies because they've either gone to private equity or they've gone on and been taken over by a Facebook or a Google or somebody like that. Well, that de-equitization is a disaster for British public because what it means is that they don't get the chance to invest in great companies. And the public market should be the most cost-effective, the lowest cost of capital, and the cheapest way of people to raise capital and finance their businesses. And Britain is particularly great in producing and innovation of great businesses, not just technical businesses, but we've seen with biotechs, we've seen with engineering, we've seen with all sorts of companies. And what we want to do is create the environment that allows these companies to raise capital and know that they will have good protection from the exchange, but also good secondary trading, both with retail and wholesale. So we need to enhance the brand because clearly the brand as it stands today just is not acceptable, whether in the previous lives, whether it's NEX or ISDX or Plus Markets or OFX, it has failed to deliver. And we need to certainly do those three things. Get more institutions involved in buying companies or investing in companies. Create better credibility and better standards and make certain that the liquidity is available. And I'm going to tell you how we're looking to do that. But what also is important is the appropriateness of the regulation. A company that is market cap of, say, 10 million should trade and should have regulation very different to that of a company that is a market cap of, say, 100 million, which again should have a different set of trading rules and floating requirements to a company that, say, is a market cap of a billion. Great companies start small, they grow, and they mature. And if anybody is interested in gardening, when you first plant something, you don't go out and allow to prune it and cut it. You need to nurture it. You need to take care of it. You need to water it until it really grows into a strong shrub. And at that point in time, you can start to allow people to prune and cut. And it's the same thing with companies. Early stage growth companies need to be protected and they need to work alongside their issuers and get the support of their investors. Now, three things are part of Aquis, which has made us successful, which is technology, transparency, and innovation. And one of the criticisms we think we get in the primary markets, especially of small caps, is the transparency. And one thing that we want to make quite certain is a set of rules that actually allow investors to have full transparency on companies. So let me talk a little bit about how we're planning to do all this. The gaining of institutional and asset manager support. I have written to 22 of some of the leading fund managers asking them, would they be prepared to put their name on a website that would allow to say with no commitment, would they actually invest in companies that were listed on the Aquis Stock Exchange, provided there were good mechanisms for transparency and liquidity, good corporate governance? And the response we've had so far, and this will go up on our website in a matter of weeks from now when we've had all the responses, the vast majority have said, of course we would. It is not about the exchange that something's listed on. It's about the quality, transparency, and the governance that counts. So I believe that we can, and very interestingly, with British Honey Company, with Vulcan, with TrueSpine, we saw institutional investment starting. Now, we've got a long way to go, but I think it's a great start. We have to enhance the trading mechanisms for liquidity. And as I said, we have already implemented or will complete that implementation by next Monday. But we're also working on where we have got market makers in our system getting more competition, tighter spreads, and deeper liquidity. We don't want to see the retail market looking at spreads that are 15, 20% wide. We don't think that's any incentive. And we've got to find a mechanism, and we're working on that now. And I'm hopeful that in the coming months, you will see a new program that will enhance the number of market makers and the spreads by using our technology, by using competition among market makers, and by actually having some other sort of incentivization to get people to have this narrower spreads. It is a constant criticism of small caps that people can't trade. And it is ever more important for the institutional investors that the retail investors are there supplying and creating much of that liquidity that's needed in our industry. The next thing we're going to do is probably the most controversial, which is, if you remember, I said, as a gardener, when you plant something, you want to make certain and protect it. And what this exchange is going to do is protect small cap growth companies by prohibiting the short selling of their stock unless you are a designated market maker in that stock. It appears to me that a company that generates good profits, who through a COVID crisis or some other crisis, then falls and has big problems, allows other investors to sell short their stock in a particularly illiquid markets, meaning two things occur. The stock collapses, the staff are demotivated because their options are out or stock are underwater, and the currency that you had in order to do transactions as a small company suddenly fail. And what happens? The company ultimately fails. So there are great companies, small cap companies all over Europe that fail today because of this practice. Now, I'm not saying that short selling is a bad thing when you're a large company, but when you are actually in your growth phase, you should allow the entrepreneur to do what they say they're going to do. And if you're a shareholder in one of those companies and they fail to do what they say they're going to do, then you should be the person who actually sells their stock, and not somebody else who gets in front of you and sells it short. So we have brought this rule, or are currently bringing this rule in. Now, the fourth thing, the segmenting of the market. This goes back to the point about the difference of companies when they start, grow, and mature. And we're segmenting our market into three different segments. The access market, as it will be called, is part of our growth market. And a growth market has exactly the same tax advantages of other growth markets in Europe. Namely, the AIM market here, you don't pay stamp duty, you get IHT relief. We have exactly the same privileges, but they should be for growth stocks. And so the access market will be for companies less than 10 million. They're learning, in effect, their trade. They have to have an admissions document to come to market. They can have a free float of 10%. Or more, but it is as low as 10%. And these companies, they're not going to trade a huge amount, but they are the early stages of being a public company and understanding what it really means to be a public company. From access, we then move to the apex market. And I believe that will be the Aquis Stock Exchange sweet spot. This, we say a minimum criteria is 10 million market cap, but I think it'll be 30 million to 100 million. And what we're saying there is that if you want to come and be quoted on the Aquis Exchange, you're actually going to have to write a growth prospectus. Now, I can hear people immediately go, prospectus, that's hugely costly. Well, when I started in the city, I could read a prospectus, and that was 40-something years ago, probably read one or two prospectuses over a lunch. I'm much older now, and certainly at the age of 60, I can't read as quickly. But the prospectus that's 750 pages long takes me, longer than a weekend. That is wrong. It comes back to proportionality. There is too much put into these prospectuses. And the growth prospectus was specifically designed for smaller companies to be able to go and produce it at a lower cost. And what does a prospectus allow? It allows the retail market to be involved in an IPO. So our apex stocks will be required to write a growth prospectus. But we're going to help by using technology. We're going to use templating. And we've spoken to all sorts of lawyers and accountants. We believe that templated growth prospectuses can be produced at no cost extra than you would necessarily paying for today's admissions document. And the prospectus is a higher standard than the admissions document. And therefore, what we're putting ourselves out by segmenting the market is creating a standard for this segment higher than you see on AIM and allowing retail immediately in at the IPO, thereby giving a greater chance for greater liquidity in the secondary trading. And that, we believe, is really important. So what else happens in Apex? The free float has to be 25% or higher. You have to have a set number of market makers. Now, I believe that with our market maker enhancement scheme, we can actually get 5, 6, or 7 market makers in every single one of the stocks and create greater competition. But the minimum requirement will be for 2 market makers. We also have to have high corporate governance. We did a survey with asset managers, and we found the overriding comment that they made at investing in stocks is how good the corporate governance is. And we've seen today in the small cap market all sorts of behaviors going on, which wouldn't have happened had you had strong corporate governance. So once again, an Apex stock is going to have to sign up to either the QCA corporate governance code or the FRC UK corporate governance code. We think by raising these standards, gaining greater credibility, and actually improving the marketplace and the quality, by enhancing liquidity, by actually having a plan to promote more market makers to compete, by protecting long-term investors and by prohibiting short selling and actually protecting the issuer, and by getting institutional asset management support, we can solve many of the problems that we've seen in the past with companies trying to compete against the monopoly of the national exchange. So just to quickly run through those, segmenting the market gives the appropriate support, the appropriate regulation for a particular stock dependent upon its size. Gaining greater institutional support means that more and more companies will actually come and want to list on the Aquis Stock Exchange. Prohibiting short selling, as I said, gives you that stability. It gives the entrepreneur the chance to do what they say they're going to do, and it protects you, the long-term investor, from volatility that is not needed and gives you the choice to decide when to buy and sell stock. And enhanced trading mechanisms by having tighter spreads, better competitive price discovery, more retail access, more data available to the retail market. And that is another thing that is absolutely essential to make the primary markets work. I am incredibly optimistic by what we can do over the next 2 to 3 years within the Aquis Stock Exchange. At that point, I'm now going to pass you back to Jonathan, who can go through the numbers that we've just reported for our half-year results.
Thank you. And these, in our opinion, are a very strong set of results. The overall revenue has increased by 44% to just a little under 5 million. And whilst in the meantime, we have been investing further in our R&D, our technology, and our sales, which has resulted in an increase of 24% in expenses. This resulted in an EBITDA profit of 500,000, which is a considerable improvement on last year's small EBITDA loss of 0.2, and a very small profit of 12,000. But as Alistair said, it is, I think, every entrepreneur's dream to actually build a company and make it profitable and successful. We have a strong balance sheet. Our regulatory capital surplus is 11.3 million. Our capital requirement has increased from 1.8 million to 2.6, but that's very much in line with the increase in the business. And as I said, a very strong surplus and a net cash position of 11 million. And what that allows us to do is to continue to invest in and grow the business without putting any risk or strain on the organization. I move on to some of the things that we've been doing during the last 6 months. It's been a very interesting period to recruit, but I'm pleased to say that unlike a lot of organizations who, unfortunately for them, had to furlough or reduce staff, we have increased staff. We made a net 7 hires during the course of that of the COVID crisis, and all of them are now on board and are bedding in well. Included in that is the recruitment of a chief technology officer. This is really going to help us in terms of our development of our technology and help us drive the software licensing business as we go into the next phase. We've also been investing in the R&D, and we have just recently signed up a knowledge transfer partnership with the University of Derby. This is going to be a collaboration with them around artificial intelligence and machine learning, initially in our market surveillance product, but in due course, we will be looking to expand that further. Data is a hugely important part of our industry, and being able to analyze that data will help enormously with our clients and with potential clients in the future in terms of how we can support them and grow the organization. With that, I will hand you back to Alistair, who is going to just summarize the position.
I remain unbelievably optimistic. Now, you know, having been in this business and set it up eight years ago, I don't think I've ever been more excited than I am now about the different opportunities that we have in front of us. Clearly, we have to continue to focus on executing our core strategy. And the core business is obviously the exchange large cap business. And I have every belief, as you can see from those slides, that the liquidity profile we have and the market share that we can gain over the period of time, we have every chance of reaching our ambition of being at least north of 10%. The ambition for the company has always to be one of the largest leading exchange services groups in the world. And I believe that we can achieve that goal. We are a fintech company. We are a technology-driven business. And I'm absolutely delighted to say that from March this year, or March the 16th, when the government created the lockdown and everybody had to work from home, we have never had to have anybody in the office to operate our system. We've been able to grow our business, and we've been able to manage the exchange and manage the complex technology remotely ever since that date. Gradually, we're seeing some people coming back to the office because they actually prefer to work from there, but there's no immediate demand to get people back into the offices. Current trading is very much in line with market expectations, and we say that because I don't think anybody has the crystal ball to know exactly what is going to happen with COVID. But I do think what we can do with the Aquis Stock Exchange and how we can monetize that, and I do believe that we will get a huge number of new issues over the next 2 to 3 years. The monetization of a stock exchange isn't by its listing fees. It is really out of its data. And one of the things we have done is we're harmonizing data across the Aquis Stock Exchange and our traditional Aquis Exchange. We're keeping with the rule that we've always had is if you are a member of the exchange, we do not charge for data. But if you distribute our data or if you're a third party, there will be a charge. And we've harmonized those costs, which we think will be beneficial to the bottom line for starting as of January the 1st next year. So in short, I am very optimistic. I believe that the three divisions we have, the technologies, the exchange, and the stock exchange, have great potential. Now, we have had two headwinds against us for the last 24 months with Brexit, as I started with Brexit, and also with COVID. I have got to believe that by the end of this year, we will have had a conclusion with Brexit. Sadly, I think it probably is a very hard Brexit. But in the worst case scenario, we are positioned and ready to be able to maintain and continue to grow our business. And we have to hope and believe that COVID will ultimately find a cure or some preventative medicine to allow us to go back to some form of normality. And at the time when the headwinds change into a tailwind, because regulation is right behind us enforcing things like a consolidated tape to allow data to be recognized so that people can prove best execution. When people look at all the various RTSs that are there, we are very much in favor of the regulation because the regulation helps our business. And as the regulators start to stamp down on best execution, then we think we will significantly benefit. So we do believe that over the coming years, those headwinds will convert into a tailwind, and we believe that we can substantially grow for the benefit of our investors, this company. And at that point, I would love to open up to questions, anybody there is who's listening to this call.
We have a question from John Evans, who asks, are there any new developments in the establishment of a European consolidated tape for market data?
Well, John, the answer is yes. I've got good news and bad news. Is yes, there is a lot of talk about a consolidated tape. And we did believe that the end of that, because both ESMA, the European regulator, and the Commission have both actually set committees aside to, in order to able to look at bringing in a consolidated tape. In fact, it was written in the MiFID II regulation that after 2 years following MiFID, the regulators had the mandate to force a consolidated tape on the industry. And we were definitely moving in that direction until COVID. And unfortunately, the regulators recently have looked at that and have said, well, everything is delayed because they need to focus on their own economies and they need to focus on the impacts of Brexit. So in short, we do believe that a consolidated tape will happen, but we don't believe that a consolidated tape will happen within the next 2 years, which we had planned. And for that reason, we started to harmonize our data so that we can start to monetize data. What I would say is if a consolidated tape comes into this industry and we reach our goal of 10% market share, that is significantly beneficial to Aquis, because obviously the way that it works in the United States, where you have the SIP and the Consolidated Tape Authority, means that you get a percentage of the tape revenue. In my opinion, as if we move to that, we would see data prices collapse, hopefully by at least 50%. And personally, I think it's an absolute disgrace the amount of money that national exchanges charge for the cost of their data. And it is something that I think it, you know, absolutely inhibits this business and prevents this business from growing as fast as it can. Not Aquis, but the market as a whole. And I really am a great proponent to reduce the cost of data, reduce the costs of trading, and to enhance liquidity through competition.
Great. And John goes on to ask, is there any evidence you can share for customers being pushed into the higher tiers by virtue of the enormous volumes in February and March, continuing to maintain their position in the new higher tier level?
I think what is really interesting about that, and it's sort of almost amusing but sad at the same time, is that you can talk and preach about a subscription model for many years. And what we did find, obviously, in March when we saw these huge volumes take place, is a number of people did get into the top tier. And what I thought was fascinating from that is we honestly had, hand on heart, a company call us up and say, you know, now we're in the top tier. Does that mean everything I trade from now on is completely free? And we sort of gasped a sigh of breath and said, well, actually, yes, you know, that's what the prescription model has, the subscription model has done, which is, you know, this marginal cost of zero. And they said, oh, well, we should be sending you all your order flow. And I think what March did is it sort of proved the model to many people. We didn't financially necessarily benefit because, of course, customers who'd done 30,000 messages could then be trading 130,000 messages. And we had people doing that sort of amount without any further increase in cost to them. And of course, they once you've actually experienced that, then what you do is you start to move on thinking, well, actually the subscription model can significantly change. So I think what it did for us is it really proved the concept. Now, if volumes really decline, and it's possible that volumes do decline, then obviously we do suffer, because volumes will come back and people will drop down the tiers. We're not like a mobile phone company that commits you to a contract for 2 years. We charge on a month-by-month basis. So people can go up and down in a month. But what we do believe, we're very confident in the model, that the benefits that people see mean that more and more people will actually start to trade and will start to want to get to the top tier. And the general experience is a bank, a top-tier bank, will start in at the £5,000 to £15,000 level. And within a few months, we'll be trading at the sort of £15,000 to £30,000 tier. And gradually, as we convince and show them about the smart order router and the benefit and the cost savings, and by the way, the cost savings on toxicity alone, we believe and can prove, are worth more than £1 billion to the end investor. That is £1 billion. That's 1 week's pension for every private pensioner in the country. We're not talking about small sums of money. And the cost savings to the investor, to the bank, will be something in the region of 10 to 20 million pounds a year of execution exchange fees. So not only do the banks can save, but the investors can save substantially too. And I think once we've got that message across, more and more people will start to use Aquis first rather than using Aquis, you know, wherever they're currently using them today. I hope that answers your question. So the in short, yes, we've seen some evidence and proof that once you've experienced the subscription benefit, you maintain it.
Thank you. And Jurian Hoffman asks, what are your future investment plans?
Well, the first thing, we don't have any future acquisitions or investments to make. And I think that was a point we made to a number of our institutional investors the last few days. I think some people who were looking at Aquis and suddenly thought, well, you know, at some point they're going to come back and need to raise capital. We have no intention of raising capital. We have 11.2 million pounds of cash sitting on the balance sheet. We're EBITDA positive and we're profitable for this half year. So we will, in the case of something like a Next Exchange, which fitted perfectly into what we were trying to achieve as to become a leading exchange services group, look at those opportunities. But we have nothing. We want to integrate this first. We want to prove further the primary market model before we make and do anything else. So there's nothing on the horizon that we see. But I wouldn't say that, you know, don't ever say never. If an opportunity came along and it was good and we could look at it and it really fitted in with our longer term plans and strategy, then yes, obviously, we would take a look at something.
And Joe Capaldi asks, what will drive more trading flow with existing clients?
I think it's the evidence, which is why we're doing this thing with the University of Derby about data and looking at artificial intelligence and machine learning. I think the very fact that we can start to show people that the cost savings to the end investor is in excess of a billion if you were to use Aquis. And then we can start using that data. There was a thing called RTS27, where every single exchange in Europe, four times a day, had to provide, or any platform, not just exchange, had to provide that data to the regulator so that they could look at the bid offer spread and the depth of liquidity. Well, we want to take that one stage further and look at all data and start to show people that why is it that people have started or continue to trade in venues that are more expensive and less toxic or more toxic than us. Therefore, the end investor is actually not necessarily getting, in our opinion, best execution. And I think we need to show more evidence to people to help that education. And I think it's those things that will allow people to start to walk up those tiers to get everybody into the top tier. And it's certainly our ambition. The top 15 banks, of which 14 are already members of us, the top 15 banks in Europe, they should all be trading in the top tier. They certainly aren't today. And there's no reason why they shouldn't be, apart from the fact of the various vested interests that I think people have in the industry. And it's our job to show and prove and get the asset management community and the retail community to question their brokers. I would ask anybody who's on this call, because I am shocked how many of the execution-only brokers have no access to Aquis today. And we're going to make a very strong push to these people, because it is wrong. You should be able to trade Aquis Stock Exchange stocks. Companies like Chapel Down or National Book Records or Adams or Shepherd Neame or anybody like that, or the cannabis companies. There are five cannabis companies that I think are great interest to retail investors. Everybody should be able to trade those stocks. And they quite often can't, because the execution-only brokers haven't actually connected. And that will change if the retail market stand up and say, we want to trade. We want to trade also on Aquis to trade in the larger cap stocks where we can actually see significant benefits and cost reductions. So, you know, this is about educating not just our direct customers, because it becomes a bit strange. Our direct customers don't necessarily like the transparency we force on the market. But it's strange that our customer's customer, you, the retail market, you, the institutional investor, actually does like our model. Because in effect, what we're doing is we are cheapening the cost for you and getting better performance for you. And that's what we're trying to do.
So Joe Capaldi goes on to ask, what incentives are you looking to provide to market makers and companies to list on Aquis Exchange rather than AIM? I.e., why would one of the major London brokers advise a client to list on Aquis Exchange as opposed to AIM? Will it be cheaper?
Okay. Well, the answer is it's not just about cheapness. I think we can be very efficient, but I think the mistake that the previous people have done is try to say we can try and replicate AIM and do it cheap. Cheap is not the answer to this. What we need to do is, when we floated our company 2 years ago, we picked three banks to have a beauty parade, three lawyers, following week, three accountants. And then we're told, having picked, we're going to the London Stock Exchange. And I question now, where's the beauty parade of exchanges? Because a company should have a choice. So on that question, let me ask you the issuer one first, which is, if you can show that debt spreads are tighter and liquidity is deeper in your secondary market, if you can show and differentiate from AIM that actually we will protect the issuer because we have a short sell ban, if we can show that we will have a relationship, unlike the Nomad scheme, whereby we will have a relationship with the issuer to help them grow, as well as the advisor and the broker. If we can show that the standards are higher because you've got a growth prospectus and we can show you access to retail market, and if we can show that the free float remains strong and there's a corporate governance code which is forced upon you because you've got to reach the standards that are necessary for institutions and retail to invest in you, I think these things that differentiate us dramatically from the AIM market. And I think what is interesting is people turn around and say, well, these companies listed already on the Aquis Stock Exchange, you know, they're small, we're not going to invest in those. There's a number of wealth managers who today tell me that they can't invest in Aquis Stock Exchange. I want them to review that, because it's a very interesting fact that the top 20 stocks on the AIM market, most of them have a market cap in excess of a billion. Many of them would be in the FTSE 100 or the FTSE 250. And I'm not quite certain that they should be described as growth stocks. If you take those out, the average market capitalization of an AIM company is around about 75 million. The average market capitalization of an Apex company on the Aquis Stock Exchange is 62 million. And these wealth managers will allow the AIM companies to be part of people's SIPs, but they won't allow the Aquis Apex market to be in the SIP. Even though, once we've made these changes, we believe that they will be better protected, higher standard, and greater liquidity. And that is something that we need to change, and we need to change it quickly. Now, I can't go into the detail on the first part of your question, which is what incentives are we going to do to market makers? Because at that point in time, this is confidential, and we're currently working with them. But I am very, very hopeful that we will be able to get considerable number of market makers, and we've already got some already signing up. And I do believe that every stock in the Apex market and a number in the Access market will have multiple market makers competing. And I'm sadly can't go into the further detail, but I can assure you that this is a work in progress, and that we will be looking to talk about this in the months in the future. So I think that is the thing that differentiates us. Yes, we will be cheaper, because there won't be Nomad fees, and we're going to take on more responsibility as an exchange. The exchange will interview every management team and the boards of the companies that come and list, something that doesn't happen in AIM today. In fact, one of my best days is when we floated on the London Stock Exchange on AIM, and very kindly they allowed me to open the market. They gave me a glass of champagne, met lots of dignitaries, shook lots of hands. I wrote them a small check for our listing. And what they forgot to tell me, it was actually a leaving party. Because from that day onwards, I can't actually talk to the AIM market. And I think that's fundamentally wrong. We want people, and we think standards will raise when issuers can actually talk directly with their exchange and talk to their advisors and brokers. So we are going to do something that's radically different, but we do think that radically different is what's required to get true competition in primary markets. It's been far too long a monopoly.
And Jurian Hoffman goes on to ask, how is the pipeline of potential new customers evolving?
On the exchange side, it's a solid pipeline. We have focused on the large banks in the past. We're now focusing on the mid-tier banks. There are three areas that you need to convince in an organization, a mid-cap or a mid-tier broker or a smaller bank, which is the legal side, because they've got to sign a term of business. The best execution committee, which is always made up of several people there, and also then the connectivity through the technology department. So it's not always easy to get people connected, which is why in a period of COVID, we haven't been as quick as we would like to. Getting people connected on the Aquis Stock Exchange side, that really is now a very, very large education process for us. And the pipeline on the Aquis Stock Exchange looks good, much better than I thought at this point in time. You know, we have got a lot of very interesting companies that I think in the next 12 months, 18 months will come and list with us. And I think there are a number of companies that will leave other markets because of the protection that we can offer. And hopefully, once we've done this, tighter spreads, make certain that they will move across because they'll actually want to get more liquidity. So, again, we remain very optimistic of what we can do there.
Great. And we're now going to go to Robin Maxwell, who has a verbal question.
Alistair, good afternoon. Jonathan, good afternoon to you. I wanted just to come back on the exchange and the Brexit impact or lack of it. So if we get to next year, we've got a hard Brexit in front of us. Does that change the relationship at all with the other exchanges around Europe and your ability to access them in any way, shape or form? And is there any connection with the earlier statement you made about the lack of customers having come on board during COVID? So we went up to 31 from 30.
Absolutely not. The reason from 30 to 31 is simply that it's very hard in this environment when people are working from home to actually add more. I'm more optimistic in the second half of this year and going forward. But obviously, if COVID has a second wave, then that could sort of take that away from us. Your point on Brexit is, what I do believe will happen now is the markets become bifurcated. It's a tragedy, and politicians, I'm not quite understand well enough the workings and the mechanics of markets. But what will happen is the reason we set up an office in Paris is that EU 27 countries, if there is what the regulators will bring in, and they've said in Europe that they will, a shared trade obligation.
I'm afraid we lost Alistair. So I will just finish that, and that is that if you are based in Europe, then the share trading obligation means that you would need to transact your business on Aquis Exchange Europe, and if you're based in the UK, then you'll be able to transact that business on Aquis Exchange UK. So either way, we will be completely available to continue trading as we are today.
Okay, brilliant. That's very useful to know. I have to confess I've forgotten about the Paris office. Then I've got a question on the stock exchange. So you've answered most of them already, but one is, how will the relationship change with the institutional investor at IPO? One of the problems at the moment is that institutional investors are getting too much of the cake at IPO. So how will we ensure that the retail investor is getting a big enough slice of the cake at IPO? And will you be working with people like Primary Bid or others to ensure that? I mean, I'm just trying to get a...
We won't necessarily be working with the Primary Bid or one of the others, although I think they have got very interesting business models, and we've had some discussions with them and their peers. But I think the key change that we're going to make is it will be promoting the growth prospectus, but doing it in a structured way. And in doing that, what we will be able to do is we'll be able to offer out to retail at the same time. We think it's a real shame that you have a high quality company, retail can't invest at the IPO, it trades at a 15 to 20% premium, and that's when retail can come in. It's illogical that retail can't invest at an IPO, but they can invest 30 seconds later. That is just not right. So what we're hoping is, with the growth prospectus, that we'll be in a position where retail will be able to subscribe for stock at the IPO rather than later on.
You've got the biggest supporter of retail market just sitting here. You know, I am a massive supporter that retail should have greater access to IPOs. It should be more involved in the exchanges. And today, I think it's pretty appalling. I don't think the retail investor gets a good deal at all. I think spreads are too wide, liquidity is too is too small. I don't think there's enough data out there. I don't think there's enough information. I want to change all of that. And I think we at Aquis absolutely want to change all of that.
Brilliant. Excellent. Thank you very much indeed.
And Jeremy McCowan asks, do you plan to list Aquis on the Aquis Exchange instead of AIM?
Great. It's a great question. And yes, we would absolutely love to, at the fastest time possible, list Aquis on the Aquis Stock Exchange. It's a logical thing to do. We have one small technical problem, which is, unfortunately, we are the regulator. The great thing about having the recognized investment exchange license, and there's only us and the London Stock Exchange involved in equities who have that license in the UK, means that we are the regulator of our market. And we now have to persuade the regulator that our regulator, which is obviously the FCA, the Financial Conduct Authority, that we are capable of regulating ourselves. Now, that is probably not immediately going to happen. So I think what we will look to do is probably dual list first and move our stock. So to get the benefits of some of the tighter spreads and everything else that I'm hopeful that we'll do. And I think that will show the rest of the market on AIM what we can achieve. And then hopefully we will see other companies come over as well and see the benefits of that. So yes, we have every intention of moving away from AIM at some point in time fully, but I think you'll see it in two stages.
Thank you. And Joe Capaldi asks, what are the costs to meet governance standards on Aquis Exchange in comparison to reduced disclosure on AIM, but with the Nomad fee?
Well, if you look at the QCA code, the QCA code is extremely reasonable. You can, within the QCA code, actually come up something which is not relevant to you as an exchange, you as a business, be able to be exempt for it. And of course, we will look at that. But what you have to do is sign up to a code. What is that doing? Well, it is forcing transparency. It's making quite certain that your governance of the company is correct, that you have the right people on the right committees. And we don't see some of the behaviors that take today. I don't think the expense is anything, is huge. It's the way a company ought to be run. And if you want to be a public company and have advantages and access to public markets, it's something that you need to consider before you go public. The Nomad fees, I think, are exceptionally high. And I do believe that the running costs and the advisory fees that you will have and the broker fees, should you be looking to raise more money on Aquis Stock Exchange, will be cheaper. But I keep on emphasizing, this is not about being cheap. This is not the raison d'etre of Aquis Stock Exchange. It is about doing something different, proportionate, appropriate, and something where we believe that companies can actually really look to raise capital in the cheapest, most efficient way, which is should be in the interest of the retail and wholesale investor, because the more companies that actually use the public markets, the better. And what we've seen, you can look at, there's a wonderful study out there done by New Financial that looks at the decline of the IPO process in small caps over the last 50 years. That decline has got to stop. And if it doesn't, it means that the retail investor is not going to get the opportunity of investing in UK PLC. And I think that's very wrong.
Thank you. And Martin Green asks, who is responsible for verifying the growth in your growth companies? Or is historic based not forward based?
It's absolutely not. And it's a great question, because one of the things we want to do is make certain that word growth is there. So companies that haven't got a track record. We've already turned down four companies, even since we bought this in March, because, their track record or the standards didn't reach the criteria necessary for what we have as called the Primary Markets Acceptance Committee. And that committee turned things down. So the track record is important, but also we want to know what your business plan is. We want to know that you can be profitable, that you actually are going to be an interesting investment for investors. And I think there are plenty of companies out there that wouldn't necessarily reach our criteria. And that's why we want to, as an exchange, be involved. Because, the growth element is important. And that's why, take investment vehicles. We will allow investment vehicles, but the standard for an investment vehicle is going to be much higher, because we don't want somebody just quoting something, putting it on the market, and then just leaving it for 3, 4, 5 years. We want to know clearly what these plans are, and why it will be interesting for third parties to come in and invest in these companies.
Thank you. And Alex Stephen Haynes says, with regard to onboarding of new clients, you mentioned having employees working from home was impacting the process. Have you any details going forward how you plan to tackle those challenges?
Well, I think as more and more people come back, we will have some people coming back into the offices. It is really a question of the efficiency of being able to get to the lawyers, the sort of approvals committees, the best execution committees, and being prioritized within the technology. And a lot of the technology delayed us because we weren't the highest priority. The priority to get people working at home was much more important to some of these mid-tier banks and brokers than it was actually to connect to Aquis. That will change over time, the more that people now are working from home or they start to come back. So I am optimistic that we will see those numbers start to pick up again. But our plan is to continue and make absolutely certain we're putting pressure through the asset management community that these people need to access Aquis stocks and Aquis liquidity, because if they don't, they will then fall foul of the regulator because they won't necessarily be achieving, in our opinion, best execution.
Thank you. And Marcus Barnard asks, you mentioned recruitment, 7 hires, including a CTO. Do you have more to do here in terms of recruitment?
No. In short, at this point in time, I think we've managed to recruit who we need to have got. We've taken 8 staff on from the Next Exchange. I'm very happy with those and with the 7 additional people. I think we have enough people here. But having said all of that, we will always invest as we grow in what we think are the appropriate areas. Our investment this year, our investment costs went up by 24%. And we announced to the market last year that we were going to be spending £1 million on additional things where we thought that we wanted to strengthen because the timing is good. And maybe it's my Scottish ancestry, but the ability to be able to buy at a cheaper price at a time when high quality staff are available, which sadly is the case because of COVID, we wanted to take that opportunity and hire good quality people. And that's exactly what we've done. And we will continue in the right place to always invest in this business.
And Jeremy McCowan asks about the sales cycle and what's the time period of the sales cycle?
Again, a great question, because it really depends on the business. On the Aquis technologies, the sales cycle can be anything for 2 years. We're working and introducing products to people this year that we started working on, 18 months, 2 years ago. So that is long. And the sales cycle on the technologies, but the contracts when they come are very lumpy. And because of the accounting standards, IFRS 15, these things come in at a very lumpy amounts into our P&L, unfortunately. And Jonathan may want to add on a little bit if you want to know more details about that. The sales cycle on the exchange business, I think, has been much longer than we planned. And I think that is down to the mitigating circumstances that are out there today. Normally, on a normal circumstance, the process would take somewhere between 4 to 6 months once somebody has decided they want to join. And that is merely the committees. We've had people join in a week. And I have to say, we've also had people who have taken 3 years to join. So, it can be very varied, but it should be no longer than 4 to 6 months in normal circumstances. The Aquis Stock Exchange, though, the pipeline there for new issuance, that can be quite long because companies can take a long time. And I think we're talking to some companies today that may not float for 2 years or so. But we want to be in at the very early stages because we want to be the exchange of choice for these people. And hopefully by then, we will have proved what we said. We've got to walk the talk. And, that is exactly what we've got to do over the next 2 years.
Great. And one final question is from Jeremy McCann again. Are SPACs a particular opportunity for Aquis Exchange?
As I said, special vehicles and things like that are things that we're not against. And I think people can be involved. And I do think, we've got some interesting things in the pipeline there for various programs for vehicles like this. I want to be open, and I think Jonathan and I both feel very open to, we'll look at all sorts of opportunities. What we don't want to see, though, is something that is just going to be listed for no real purpose, with no real understanding, just, we'll just do something, we'll set a company up, and then we don't quite know what we're going to do, which is why we want to meet the management, we want to meet the people involved in this, and say, what are your intentions? because, you know, we need to know that this isn't a company that's just going to sit and do nothing, but actually there is a real business plan in order for this to happen. And there's plenty of SPACs that actually that is, you know, that have genuinely very, very good reasons and very good ways of being set up. And we are talking to some people today on what I think are some really interesting programs. Thank you all very, very much indeed for listening in. And thank you all very much for the support you've given us so far. And I hope that we will be able to deliver what I think you all want. And I, you know, remain, and I can tell you the executive team of this company remain incredibly confident and very, very optimistic about the future that we have in front of us. Thank you all very much.
Yes, thank you for your time.
PI World videos and podcasts are for general information and interest. They do not constitute any kind of recommendation or inducement to buy shares of any company. PI World is not offering any kind of financial advice, and nothing in our material should be taken as such.